Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio. Special Operations Military News and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to another wonderful episode of Soft Rep Radio. I am the man behind the glasses, Rad, your host. And I'm going to do something. I'm going to leave him off for this episode. I'm going to give my guest some eye contact during this as best I can, because he's got a really cool story. But before we get into Cyrus's story, I want to remind you about our merch store. All right. You guys know that we rely on you and listening, being a part of our Soft Rep Mafia, Soft Rep community. So please keep buying our merch. We really appreciate it. And then also supporting the softrep.com/book-club. book-club at softrep.com. Get into the reading. Go read a banned book. If you don't enjoy my club, just go read a banned book or a book. Okay, go read a book. I dare you. Now, with that said, I have former Army Ranger, I think First Ranger, First Battalion, First is the best of the Rangers. Hold on. Also, Navajo Nation journalist, freelancer. Okay, so he writes and goes after, you know, stories for the Navajo Nation. Cyrus Norcross, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Rad. I've listened to the podcast quite a bit, so glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. Really, honestly, it's awesome. Now, as you know, on the podcast, I like to talk to my guests a little bit about like where you came from. So as a young man, Cyrus, you know, we touched base that you were a Ranger. What led you to wanting to get into the military in the first place? And where'd you come from? Are you from the reservation? Did you live in the city? Can you tell us a little bit about your backstory and how you got in the military?
Yeah, so I grew up in Arizona on the Navajo Nation. I grew up on and off. My family was really big into, well, not my family, I have military history. Like a lot of my family served, and I've heard stories going way back before the Spanish arrived. Like hearing stories of like one of my great-great-great-great-grandfathers killing a Ute chief's son, taking his horse, and then keeping it. And then that's kind of how our name kind of got about, our traditional name, I should say, Gray Horse. Basically, like, means like the one who killed a guy for the gray horse, or like the guy who took the gray horse. It's kind of like that. So yeah, it goes back. Yeah. And then we Navajo scouts, and then like one of our uncles was like, not uncles, one of my great-great-grandfathers was searching for Pancho Villa, like during that time.
Wow.
World War One had people going, then World War Two came, so that's where my grandpa was at, and he wasn't a Cotacker, but he was in the North African campaign, so he was out there with Third ID, and like he fought Rommel, and then he fought to Italy.
Rommel,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Rommel's books of like how to fight wars. You know, Schwarzkopf's like, I've read every Rommel book. You know, and here's your grandfather kicking his ass. Read his book.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and from there, like, you know, my uncle went to Vietnam. Was in Quezon when that all went down. Wow. My dad was in the 80s, so it was like during the Cold War time. But he was Green Beret, and he got to do some cool stuff.
Same with my dad.
And then me. So now it's me. And so I've like, you know, heard all those stories growing up. I was surrounded by World War II veterans as a kid, because they would kind of like just see them as a kid, because there's so many of them back then when I was like 8-10 years old.
Right.
And just like, they would just like talk to me. I had no idea what they were talking about at the time. But then 9/11 happened. So that's kind of why I was like, man, I'm going to miss the war. I'm in seventh grade or eighth grade, whatever it was. And I was like, and then fast forward a couple of years, I was like, oh, I'm going to be able to, you know, serve and kind of keep that lineage going. So
right,
and that's when I joined.
Tradition. And so the Army, did they come knocking on your door, or were you like, I want the Army?
Yeah, I was actually originally going to go Marines just to piss my dad off.
Yeah.
I was talking to this recruiter because the Marines weren't there. And so the recruiter was like, oh, I was like, well, my dad was SF and I want to go Green Beret. And he's like, well, you're too young, man. You're 17 right now. And I was like, well, what can I do? He's like, you have to be 21 to join, to go SF. And he's like, well, he goes, I can sign you up for an option 40 contract, which is a Ranger contract. And I was like, well, you know, Ranger. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll do that. Like, and what did they do? I didn't know what really a Ranger was back then. And he was like, oh, you've seen Black Hawk Down? I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen that. And he's like, yeah, that's what a Ranger is. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, cool, I'll do that. So that's how I got the option 40 contract. And next thing you know, I'm taking off like a month after I graduated from high school.
Thanks a lot, Colonel Danny McKnight of the Rangers that was in Black Hawk Down, for inspiring. Have you seen Black Hawk Down? Did you see Danny McKnight get shot in the neck? Did you see that? Did you see Matt Eversman rappelling out of a Black Hawk helicopter with RPGs? That's what a Ranger does, right? And funny enough, those two guys both play airsoft, which is war games on a large scale. Yeah, but that's another story. But so Cyrus, did you think that the Rangers was what you thought the Rangers was going to be? I mean, like when you're going through like indoctrination and, you know, happen to sing the Ranger Creed, probably up to your armpits and some swallow of some whole hell. I don't know. Am I assuming?
You're not wrong. Well, I got to a indoctrination program, Ranger indoctrination RIP, and it was essentially what I thought it would be, you know, just a lot of yelling, like I was like, oh, okay, now I'm in the Army. It's kind of like what I thought. Like, I, not to brag, you know, but I was like, yeah, I was a varsity cross country. I was varsity in wrestling, and I had a I was a bull rider at the time. So like when I was a kid, I started doing steer riding, calf riding. Got in high school, started bull riding, and then my dad was like, hey, you got to choose, you know, bull riding or high school sports. And I decided to go with high school sports, but I would still like hop on every once in a while, and so I was like, wow, this is cool. Like, this is what I like. Yeah. Like, this is a challenge. And it definitely was like making us up in the middle of the night, making us like go into formation middle of the night, like 10 minutes. And there's like a four story building, three stories, I think it was. And like people just throwing their rucksacks and all their duffel bags outside the window, trying to make formation on the blacktop. And we never made the time. So just
doing whatever
smoked.
You could to get out on time, right? So they're like giving you this impossible time frame of muster, right? That's what you're telling me. Like, roll call and be there in 30 seconds. You're like, dude, how? Jumping off the building to try to be on time, basically, huh?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You're splattered in formation. Does that count, sir?
Yeah, it was an interesting time period. like they were always talking to us about the war. So one of the things I vividly remember was I went through the winter. So they made us crawl through some water, This is cold range. And we ended up, instead of like smoking us at night, which is what we were all hoping to get smoked so we could stay warm, they didn't smoke us. They made us like walk through water and they put us in formation, double arm intervals, and created a fire in front of us, like it's just giant bonfire. And they started barbecuing in front of us. They started grabbing all our like clean clothes and putting it down, and got our sleeping bags, like warm sleeping bags, and put them down. Like, hey, and they just started telling us war stories, like of Iraq, Afghanistan, of the invasion. A lot of these dudes, and like they're just like, man, you can quit right now. You can, you don't have to deal with this. You don't have to deal with being in the cold. You don't have to deal with any of this anymore. You don't deal have to be hungry. You can just go quit, be next to this warm fire, get a warm sleeping bag, warm clothes, and a burger. And they were cooking burgers. And people were just like quit, walking off and going and quitting. Man, it was just like...
it's like some kind of game show, but not. You know, it's like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Mr. Beast is like, I'll give you $1,000 if you give up on this $1,000,000. They're like, deal. You're like, no, yeah. You're so close. He just baited your brain, you know? And so, well, good job on making it through, you know, through the Ranger process. And then you got put into the Ranger regiment, right? You went Ranger. So you didn't just get, you got put into the regiment, and that is like search and destroy, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to first battalion and went to Charlie Company. So I was there, and this big, big dude, just like everyone was like, everyone I got there was like, yeah, the place you don't want to go is Charlie Company. You don't want to go to Charlie Company. And I ended up getting Charlie Company. I just like this tall, like E6 just like came out, and like the dudes that just got deployed. And he's like, are you guys, this is all Seco? All right, come with me. And then like came with us, and everyone was like, shit, like, we're a fucking Seco. And like everyone was like, this dude was tall, man. But the more I was around this guy, this huge, huge E6, I was like, man, I want to be like this guy. Like this guy's fucking like, he's a Ranger, man. Like, that's what I want to be. I want to grow. Like, is there any drinks that I can have to grow? Yes.
I love it. So some inspiration was coming from him. Do you remember his name? You want to say it?
Yeah, I do. I do. I don't want to say his name. I know he's still like doing some cool guy stuff. So, yeah. People used to call him, I think it was, I don't remember what it was. They gave him a nickname. I don't remember that.
Oh, what is that nickname? Huh? Oh, I forget.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you got old timers coming on already, but, young man.
But there were like E4s who were around me, and they were like afraid of him. Like they'd be smoking us, and then like he'd come in, like they would stop. They were like afraid of him, and like he was like
smoke very, them.
Yeah, like he,
then why
he
you was smoking just like, these guys. What's
going on? Yeah, Bobby, he took Johnny, us on a Tenma.
Tell me what's up, and they're like, he's like, why don't you smoke yourselves for smoking them? They just want to,
yeah.
You know, he seemed like what you just said in two sentences is like, you're Seco, come with me.
Yeah.
He don't want you to die. He wants you to live. He wants you to fight with him and fight alongside of him. And yeah, fear him. The enemy fears him.
Yeah. Oh man. Like that's like, man, you pissed. Like I actually got him mad one time, and he didn't even get mad at me. He just like was like disappointed and just like walked off. And I felt super, super bad. I was like, holy shit. I just let him down. Like,
that's it.
Damn.
He's got dad vibes. He's like,
yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah. I gotta reflect on my life now.
That's like my dad. It's simple. You know, and again, your dad, Green Beret, my dad, Green Beret, you know, and they just had this look of like, my dad would be like, yeah, you're a leg, but you're my leg. It's like, okay. You know, it's like,
yeah.
True, you know, and did your dad played a huge influence in your life then, huh?
Yeah, he did. You know, just hearing a lot of stories, and I'm sure you kind of dealt with the same thing. You know, there was a lot of life, a lot of things that he didn't unpack. So he would kind of throw that on me. So I mean, I kind of grew up dealing with that as well. So I kind of had this like huge, what's the word I'm looking for, burden that he wanted me to kind of carry, and I didn't want to carry any of that. So kind of, that's one of the reasons why I left, actually, Ranger Battalion, or not Ranger Battalion, left the reservation life to go and, like, kind of get away from him. I joined the Army.
Yeah. Yeah. Guess get away from some of it and try yourself in life.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
So did you? So you deployed. You went and
I deployed. Yeah,
missions or year long missions or what?
Yeah. It was so majority of our deployments are 3 months, so 90 days. Some people got extended, like four or five months. I never got extended when I was on deployment. And yeah, so I went to Iraq. Iraq was my first deployment. The other two, I went to Afghanistan. So yeah, I mean it was good. We got a lot of bad guys. Iraq was climbing around all the time. Like we just climb these buildings, scaling these buildings. And I was like surprised, like we were doing that with full kit on and like watching these dudes just like jump in. Like we would climb all the way to the top of these ladders and then like on our foot and then like jump up, grab the ledge and then pull ourselves. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously the guy who did that would turn around and grab the guys with the other hand and do that. Like we were like scaling like three story buildings, laying a ladder across.
Probably, right. Boosting.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're doing all that.
Yeah. We were doing all that. And like, we were like laying down ladders across three story buildings. Crazy. And walking across it. Like, I'm just like, normal. Fuck, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a normal day. Oh, get the ladder, cross this roof. You know, like today,
yeah.
Cross it. Would you have a need to cross it? Like, there's just this like fine line.
Yeah.
Death is on the line, maybe.
Yeah. Before all that, I actually got to do some Arabic training. So I asked, I was like, hey, can I do some Arabic training? And so I got to do some Arabic training and one of these missions I was on, we were black side. And so it was kind of like we were on the outer perimeter, just kind of like watching to make sure there's like no dudes running off squirting. Like I guess we called them squirters back then. I don't know if they're still called the same thing or not.
Probably.
And so we ended up climbing over this wall, and like my squad leader, like he hopped over it. And then like my team leader hopped over it. And then it was me. I hopped over and this wall just crumpled like as I crawled over and I just like fell all the way down, like this whole wall just crumpled. And I just remember my squad leader walking, what the fuck are you doing? Keep the fuck down. And just like grabbed me. You know? So I was like, oh, I thought the wall fell apart. Like, and like, you can't really say anything. I just looked at it and I was like, Roger. Yeah, I really didn't know what to say. Anyways, we're like stacked up, like just watching this building. And like literally after that, some dude comes walking out. This guy walks out and, it was like, fuck. And so I was like, man, that's on me. Like, I feel bad now. And the dude's like walking out. And he was just kind of like, He was actually using the restroom. That's like actually what he was doing. He didn't hear anything. He actually was using the restroom. So he actually came out. And so we thought he was actually coming out to see like what's going on, you know? And so all these, you see night vision, just all these lasers, little green lasers on this dude. And he's just like walking toward us. And like the squad leader's like, yo, where's the interpreter? We need the interpreter right now. And he's not coming up. No interpreter. Interpreter's trying to do something else, and they kept getting closer. And I was like, "Man, this is what I took Arabic class for." And without even asking my squad leader, I was like, "Hey, Ethnon Riki," which means, "Hey, we're Americans." And then you know, my squad was like, "Tell him to lift up his shirt." And I was like, "Hey, lift up your shirt." So he lifted up his shirt. Tell him to turn around. Like, "Hey, man, stay where you're at. Don't move anymore. Just lay on the ground." And the dude was like, "Hey, is that you, Muhammad?" Like, he was like asking, like he thought it was one of his buddies or something. And was like, "No, we're Americans." Was telling him that and got him to lay down. Eventually, you know, the interpreter like actually talked to him and was like, "Oh, dude, the guy was coming out to take a dump."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and all of a sudden, like, all these predator lasers are all over him, just like any one of them. You know what I'm saying? Everybody had to keep muzzle discipline, trigger discipline.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, it takes
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
One dude to be like itchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yeah.
Dude. Yeah, so situation, like right? Because the dude just wanted to take a dump.
Yeah, man. Like, I mean, like, and after that, I was like, wow, this was actually like really crucial to have some sort of Arabic training. And well, me and my other buddy, we actually did a whole call out on this house as well, on top of a rooftop. And it was like an apartment. And like it was an apartment, then an outside apartment. So it was kind of separate from the rest of the apartments. I did call on that family too. And it was like actually like 10 people in that thing. And like between me and him, the interpreter's not there again. And the interpreter's like with the main assault force. We were black sites. We're on top of these buildings. Same thing happening again, man. We're like, oh shit, there's fucking more people up here. And they're just like right behind our backs. And so me and my buddy, we ended up like doing a call out, separating the guys on one side, women and children on the other side, and like we're just like asking them, "Hey, what's your age, what's your name," and all this. And I was like, wow, man, this is really like I never thought I would be. I was like, wow, I'm doing
and
this.
You're saying the right thing, and you can understand them.
Yeah,
like, learning a language and saying the words doesn't mean you necessarily learn how they reply back, right? They might have like so you're kind of like
it was yeah, me and my buddy were actually kind of like, dude, what is this, what they said? Like it was like kind of in between me and him, like being the interpreter, and like after that, we're like, "Hey, you know, go back inside your house. Don't move around for like 10 minutes, you know, yada yada yada." And then we left and said bye bye.
Then my buddy ended up. I bet you that family is there. Like the ghosts, they came up, the American ghosts, and they spoke to us in our language, and they separated. You remember that? I bet if they're still, you know, like we're talking about it.
It was interesting. I mean, it was a bunch of rage as well. I mean, we went inside buildings, cleared buildings, like I don't even want to, like, just religiously, like it was just every day. And like I was told, like, we did within those 90 days we did 100 missions, but that's not including follow-on missions. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea how much, because we did a lot of follow-on missions. Like we would hit one target, get done, then it was like, "Hey, we're taking off to another objective." We hit that objective, get another guy. It's like, "Oh, hey, we just got intel on this other guy," and we're like, "Boom!" So like, throw up Baghdad. That was what we were doing.
Yeah, you just go one to another, and so one lead turns to another lead turns to another lead, and those are a mission within a mission in a mission. Yeah, so like one mission is like multiple.
Yeah.
It can expand. Yeah.
I mean, holy cow. Now that you bring it up, I just remember this one particular individual, and there's two missions now. There's a bunch of missions popping up now.
Yeah,
but one mission we did, there was a kid, right? There was this kid who was like 20, about the same age as me. He was 19 at the time. And he, like, we saw him at one mission, one objective. We're like, "Oh, it's just a kid, you know, whatever." We go hit another target. That kid's there again. We're like, "Whoa, this is the same kid from that last mission. Like, what, you know, what's going on here?" And then they kind of brought him in, and then like, I don't know, maybe like 2 weeks go by, we're on another target and the guy's there again. And like, we're like, "Dude, something's up with this kid." And then they end up fucking hauling him in. So that was interesting. You start like seeing like stuff like that. Like that dude was just there all the time. Interesting guy.
Just randomly.
Yeah.
Not randomly, just there, you know, like,
you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Wild, dude. Yeah. And you're sitting here like, how come we can't? The first time you're like, okay, I'm going to slide. The second time you're like, I think that kid, the third time you were like, this dude needs to get snatched or what?
Yeah, I mean, well, the second time they snatched him up,
okay,
and then he was gone, so we didn't see him for a bit. And then he just shows up again. Really,
like, I see.
What the fuck? Yeah, you know. So like, a lot of those dudes were like that. We went after some bigger targets, like just accounting where we went after. No, like gunshots or anything, but like we went in there. But there were guns in there. They didn't pick them up. But they were like Rolexes. They were Rolexes, man. Like with Saddam Hussein on there, like gold bars everywhere, and like just mansions. I was like, holy smokes, man! This is like
the haves and the have-nots, Saddam Hussein. Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, like he had a Saddam Hussein letter, like a little square one, and I was like, "That's kind of cool." So I took that.
Oh yeah, WW2.
Yeah.
I heard a story about a guy in World War II. He got a gold Luger, went on the Navy ship, and he was supposed to check all that stuff in because they like didn't have any problem with it. And when he went to go get it out of that locker, it was gone.
Wow.
You know, yeah, because the guy in the armory was like, "Hey, finders keepers, right?" Gold Luger.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine having, you know, any type of a trinket. I've seen some things I don't want to talk about from people who have come back and, you know, and it's interesting.
I've definitely know a few people who brought back some stuff and I'm like, how did you do that?
Yeah, man. I'm like, am I touching what you're telling me I'm touching? Really? Wow.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah.
There's no brains in this. That's amazing.
Yeah. I kept my little trophies to small things, a lighter. I had a little dollar. Like money was a big one for me. I wanted to kill. I wanted to collect the money. So money. I brought this chess set, and I think this broke to pieces.
You know, the U.S. used to drop soccer balls all over Iraq with you know, U.S. propaganda, like, hey, we're here. We're here for you know, to be friends. You know, and I was like, oh man, that soccer ball. How cool of a piece of gear would that be? You know, we put it over there because they're going to play with it. You know, and so the little leaflets that we drop all over the place, because you spoke of money, you know, and so like these, all these little things, I have a collection of stuff at my office that's leaflets that people have gifted me from, you know, their travels over there. I'm looking for the soccer ball.
One of my friends in Afghanistan actually found a Soviet Union hat. So like, yeah, he kept it. Yeah.
I mean, that's legit. Let's think about that one for a second. You know, after you got out of, searching and destroying and doing the Ranger stuff, you got into like journalism. Is that how that kind of transitioned? And you...
Yeah. So I ended up getting out of the Army, and I really didn't have no idea what I was going to do. So I'm like, I'm going back to the Navajo Nation, and Navajo Nation is just nothing. It's like nothing there, really.
It's the same as you left.
Kind of. Yeah, in essence, one of the things one of my friends would like talk about in Iraq and Afghanistan, I remember a conversation we had, was like, man, I can't believe people live like this. And my response was like, dude, this is how I live. Like, this is the Navajo Nation, man. Like, this is what it's like. Like, it's not that big a deal to me. Like, and I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Are you telling me that there's, in America, there's a place that's similar to a third world country? And I was like, yeah, that's a Navajo Nation for you. And so I get back and I was like, man, what am I going to do? So I actually went up to the local newspaper and I walked up and I was just basically, hey, I'm an Army Ranger. I was special operations. I can learn quick. I'm a fast learner. Give me a job. And there's like, the editor looked at me. He goes, have you ever like done photos or writing before? I was like, I've been a photographer. I've jumped out of an airplane. I've taken my camera with me. I've done, you know, it's that kind of stuff, ruck marches and training, like shots with my own camera. And like, yeah, it's like, can you do anything else? I was like, I can learn to write, because on deployments, I had like a little diary or slash, you know, journal called journal, not diary. Right. Yeah.
It's a diary, dear diary. No, it's actually a release, really, honestly. Okay.
Yeah.
It's good to have.
Yeah.
It. Yes.
So I would write in this. So that's kind of like where my writing kind of came about. So I just, they said no to me. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just join the Navajo police force. And this big dude came out, like huge. I'm not talking big, like as like muscular. I mean, like fat and came out and was like, he looked at me and I was like, hey, I want to join. I'm a former Young Ranger. It's been about 2 months. Like, let me do this. And legit, the dude was like, oh, okay. Well, just so you know, we've had Green Berets and Navy SEALs who cannot hack our academy. Our academy is extremely strenuous, and Army Rangers can't even hack it. Marines can't even hack it. So I just, not saying that you're not going to hack it, but a lot of people can't hack our academy. And I was like, man, fuck this guy. I ain't going to fucking work with this, like a police force that comes out and like tells me that already. I was like, man, fuck this. So I ended up going to school for a little bit. And during school, it's kind of like on the road to journalism now. Two of my friends as civilians went back to Iraq to help the Kurdish to fight ISIS. So I was like, man, that's fucking bomb. That's baller. And, I was like, man, that's what I want to do. I want to be doing stuff like that. Like, I'm a guy of adventure. Like, I'm not supposed to be in school. So I took off, kind of went traveling for a little bit. And I was in Alaska. And then Standing Rock was kicking off. My cousin invited me to go with him. So I went there. Really didn't have no expectation of what was going to happen. And it blew up into this whole big thing.
My best friend.
And so I get there.
Yeah.
And like, I met a lot of people there, and like a lot of it kind of reminded me of like being on deployment, where it's like, was now on the other side. Like all these people are like talking about, they have this on us. They got that on us, got the numbers on us. They're sending people in their camps. And like at the same time, a lot of these Vietnam veterans are like doing their fucking intelligence gathering on like the police over there. And like, I was, for the most part, I stayed out of all of that. Like I was like there, like,
right.
But I was like kind of, that was for the most part staying out of it, kind of like worried about my own little camp of what these guys were doing. And I ended up meeting a bunch of journalists there, like inadvertently, or kind of become friends with them. Same mindset. I didn't realize it at the time. And I was just kind of curious, and they were curious. They wanted to know about the world. I wanted to know more about the world. And so I started talking to them. One of them was a French photojournalist. He's an award-winning journalist now. He took me under his wing and showed me the ropes of journalism. And I started like walking around and hanging out with all these people he was talking to, watching how he interacted with people. And I was like, wow, man, this is cool. This journalist, it's kind of a quick background. He was in Ukraine during revolution. He was hanging out with the French Foreign Legion when the war was going on, I believe in Sudan. And like, he almost got murdered by someone with the axe. And he said the dude got killed like right in front of him. So like, I was like, wow, dude, you were the Ukraine revolution. He's since gone back to Ukraine during the war. And like, he came back now. So I keep in touch with him still. And, I got to learn a lot from him. And that's when I kind of was like, I'm going to be a journalist. Like there's not a lot of native voices. There's not a lot of native journalists out there. And I really want to speak on a lot of these issues that are going on the reservation. So I got into that, very like first big story that I was working on. I had no idea what I was doing. It was kind of a green journalist. And I was still kind of like riding off that whole Ranger, I still kind of had that cocky attitude, and I was kind of like roaming around. So I ended up going to the Tohono O'odham Reservation, which is near the border of Mexico and Arizona. So Southern Arizona, I should say, and it's right near the border. And so I heard like stories of like the cartel going into not on the reservation and knocking on doors and basically like forcing these people to be drug runners for them. And so I was like, wow, that's really interesting. So I was like talking to people about that. I was like getting contacts with the Border Patrol. And when one dude, I was able to finally kind of talk to him and we kind of set up a time. But before that happened, before I cut it and stopped the story, I was like, I went to this bar because I was like, I asked someone like, I was going to school at U of A, University of Arizona. I asked one of my colleagues, I was like, hey man, what is like a bar that's owned by the cartel or club here in Tucson, do you know of? And he was like, I don't know, man. Like, he's like, but this one place kind of seems kind of sketchy. Like, right. We'll really go there. So I went there. I went there, and like, I don't know Spanish, but I look Spanish. I look Mexican. Okay, so yeah. I was just like, yeah. So I was, yeah. So I went in, and like, guys are like asking me for like what I want to drink in Spanish. I could kind of understand them from just from tequila. A lot of my friends who were in Mexico. Yeah, I was like, I'll take a cerveza. Like, cerveza. I was like, exactly. So I was there. I was just like minding my own business, just drinking a beer, and kind of wanted to see what this place was about. All of a sudden, I see this dude just like starting something, like some sip was shit was going down, and like the bouncers, they didn't like throw him out, man. They just started beating the shit out of him. They beat this guy, like just beat the shit out of him. And like they didn't throw him out. Instead, they look to the corner. They look in the corner of like some group of guys in the corner of the room, and then you just see the guy go. And then they just fucking dragged him to another room in the back. And I was like, oh, shit, this is it. Like, I'm here right now. And I ended up, like I said, I'm a green journalist. I don't fucking know what I was doing. I mean, I could probably get a story now with more thought process. And
without an immersive experience.
Yeah.
Becoming the story, yeah. Like you're creating the story of the story.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh shit, now they're going to write about me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I didn't get invited. So the story got killed because I got invited to this Mexican party. So I go for New Year's. So I go there and I'm kind of doing my thing. I'm just talking to people. I'm not really trying to do a story. And like, my buddy was sitting with me, and then he walked off, and I was at this bar, and this guy came up to me, alligator boots on, pants, huge buckle, silk fucking dress shirt, creased hat. Yeah.
That in buckle, front of me, obviously, and, you know, it's like,
yeah, boy, yeah.
Association. Yeah, dude, you're like, yeah, what's up?
Yeah, yeah. He sits in front of me, and then he's being super calm. He's like, hey, you want a beer? And I was like, so he bought me a beer. I'm drinking a beer with him. And he was like talking to me for a little bit. And he was like, hey, you're a journalist. I was like, yeah. He goes, you're working on this story about, you know, the cartel. But I was like, yeah, I am. He's like, yeah, you should stop that story. I was like, no, I have to write it. Like, I got to, and then he's like, no, you should stop. Right. And I was like, nah, no. Like, who's this guy? I was like, who are you? And he's like, oh, you know who I am. I was like, no, I've never met you before. No, you know who I am. I was like, looking, I looked him up, and I was like, alligator boots. You know, I was like, silk dress shirt. And I was like, oh, okay, I know who you are. And he's like, yes. I'm just going to ask you kindly, stop the story. Nothing's going to happen. Just stop. And I was like, all right, stop it.
Yeah.
So that was it. I never stopped. I never continued with that story. I mean, now it's a totally different ballgame.
But at the time, bro, you're like, okay, you know, I get it. You realized it was for real. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 So like, it was kind of one of those things where it was like, I kind of saw myself as like one of those old school journalists, like getting the story, you know, like, I was like, oh man, this is not how we should be going about getting the story. Like things should be different. I learned a lot from that too, as well.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday, So follow The 7 right now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Journalism and journalists are a target, you know, and, you know, they are uncovering things. And like Khashoggi, who was, you know, butchered at the embassy by, you know, who we all know did it, had it done, you know, and he was sawn up into little pieces because he was going after the stories. You know, he was in so deep into these stories that he wouldn't stop. So, I mean, journalism is a... I don't want to say a dying craft, you know what I mean? It needs to continue. We have to keep the freedom of press and journalism out there. It has to keep going. People have to take the torch like yourself and just, you know, you're like, hey, it's a different day now, right? You'd have a different means of doing what you want to do and maybe not so involved. But well, that green journalist out there that you were is trying to chase that same thing and they're going to find themselves in the same position.
Oh, yeah. You know? And, you know, I was very fortunate, I guess you could say. And I ended up eventually around that time period. I actually dropped out of college at that time and got a job offer from one of my buddies. He's a combat controller. And he was like, hey man, I got this contract, which would be interested in. We'd be doing intelligence with the Royal Air Force with drones. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? So yeah. I did that for a good minute and basically just like helping train the Royal Air Force and intelligence gathering and to establish a terrorist network organization. Mm-hmm. And from that, and I was like the ground maneuver. So I was like the dude who like kind of like set up the guys and kind of display how, you know, people would move around and walk around and stuff like that, how they would interact with like in a gunfight. So like I was doing that. Eventually I got to the point where I was actually the guy like in the talk, you know, like talking to the
tactical operation command, right? A talk, TOC.
Right?
So you're in like a tactical operation command center. It's mobile, but I'm not sure if this is mobile. Right. And so, right.
Yeah.
And so, I'm just explaining to my listener what the talk is, right? Because you're inside of a command and control center where everybody's making decisions and there's probably maps and things being pointed at and you're in there.
So I kind of got to do that. And like my buddies were just like, the majority of them were like TACBs and majority of combat controllers. So I was like the only Army Ranger there.
Air Force, all Air Force, like, tactical party, TACP, combat controllers, clear an airfield, make sure that it's clear to land. You know, they're cool badass. 100%.
Yeah, they are, man. Cool
Connor
guys.
Matthews.
Cool
guys. Give you a shout out, bro. He just made UFC, Connor Matthews, combat controller, total soft rep. Give him a shout out.
We ended up working with those guys and they basically kind of trained me up in a lot of that. And I was like, wow, this is cool. This is really fun. I wish I was a TACP.
Air Force, when I was going through boot, they're the only guys you saw at basic training, but they had already gone through all their, you know, training and they were like in these black flight suits. No one else wears black flight suits. Everyone else is like in, you know, camis or BDUs, camouflage. And then there's these like six guys hanging over an edge of a railing, like smoking with baseball hats and black flight suits. Just big American flags on them, like Delta Force, like the movie. And I'm just like,
yeah,
bro, those guys just get to walk around and they probably have wheelbarrows to carry every pair of their balls. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, here we are. What do you need from us? Parking our wheelbarrows.
Yeah, I did that. And I actually took a lot of those skills and I started to apply that to journalism. And that upped my game like 100%. And man, like now I'm like this full-fledged journalist. And like I'm now going chasing stories now, like on a whole different level. Now it's like, okay, I'm not the one doing it. Now I'm talking to people who are in it, talking to people who like, you know, are there, who witness these stuff. And then I go and I talk to them and verify them. So a lot of these people, like I really like one of them was a girl. She, you know, she had top secret clearance. She was signals intelligence, and so like I would like reach out to her about like specific things that were happening, and so I talked to her about stuff, and so I started to establish like veterans basically,
yeah, exactly.
in these spaces, and kind of find out what's going on, like
human,
what's going right. on in the
human
community.
Intelligence.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's essentially that's what it was. I mean, as a journalist, there's a lot of stuff. I started reading a lot of journalism books, a lot of these investigative journalists, how they would go about their gathering their sources. I mean, I even started reading like some spy books just to kind of get an idea of like how they would create their sources as well. And I was like, okay, so this is what, you know, investigative journalism. Next, you know, I'm an investigative journalist, and like I'm uncovering all these different things that are happening on the reservation, a lot of corruption going on. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is wild. And
where can we read your stories that you're putting out there? Is there something that they're all aggregated, or are you just kind of like freelance and it's whoever picks up your articles, you know, if it's for the res or the Navajo reservation, as you know, Navajo Nation?
Yeah. The majority of the stories, I actually have a website, it's a really strange website. Like you can't look it up. Like you put down Cyrus Norcross journal portfolio.com. It's something like that. But I do have it on the LinkedIn. So you can find me on LinkedIn. And then I have an Instagram as well. The website's on there. So you just, it's just right there. You can click it and you see all these stories. Like literally I haven't published anything because I'm kind of focusing on my other projects right now. And I was just in New York, kind of won an award and from Mexico. It's actually called Military Veterans in Journalism. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
No, tell me the award that you just won. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's Military Veterans in Journalism. Yeah, I got it in New York, and it's basic. The story that I did it on was about potential police brutality within the Navajo Nation. Mm-hmm. And this individual ended up, 21-year-old kid was drunk, and the Navajo police officer at the time was saying he started throwing up in the back of his seat. So he took him out from the back of his seat and sat him out in the back of the car, the cop car. And he went to go to the front of the vehicle to get some gloves and some Kleenex to go clean the back of the seat. So when he went to go do that, he came back and the kid was gone. Just gone. That's what the press release said. That's what I was told. Yeah, he was just gone, disappeared. We went to look for him. We couldn't find him. And so my thing with that is I started asking questions. I was like, you're telling me that an experienced officer did not hear a 21-year-old drunk kid run away? I'm like, I've been to that police station. They actually work out of a post office. I was like, you know, I've been to the police station. It's not even a police station. It's a post office. You have 7-foot fences and it's gravel, so you can hear if someone's running.
Yeah, someone's running.
Yeah,
and I was 100%.
I was like, so you're
cuffed?
Yeah. Yeah, he's cuffed. And I was like, so you're telling me that a 21-year-old drunk kid just happened to slip through an experienced police officer's ears and eyes? Like, you weren't aware of any of this. And, you know, press release, like, what we said is what we said. And so I dove into it. The kid, they found a kid like 2 or 3 weeks later. He drowned in a canal with the handcuffs behind his back. And so I dove into that story. Like the family has now since been like done a lawsuit. And so they're trying to get some sort of like compensation from that. And
justice.
And there's really nothing going on with there. It's kind of a stalemate right now. So their lawyer, they're kind of going back and forth right now. And so that's the award I got it for. It was kind of highlighting that. I mean, it's not just that. Like the main thing I do now is called Missing Murdered Indigenous People. Mm-hmm. And that one is a huge issue. And it goes back to this case that happened back in 1978. So it's called the Oliphant versus the Quamish tribe. And this individual who's non-native was kind of heckling the tribal police for whatever. Oh, he was intoxicated, like heckling the native police there. And so the native police were like, all right, man, like you're causing an issue. So they threw him in jail and like, hey man, we're going to charge you for disorderly conduct and for, being, I forgot what the word was, assaulting the police.
He's a non-native, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's non-native, doing this through native naval police. And so it ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court. The guy was like, you guys don't have jurisdiction on me. So it goes all the way to the Supreme Court. And Supreme Court rules that tribal courts and tribal police have no jurisdiction or authorization to put non-natives in jail. And what? So that, yeah, this was in 1978. And so that still applies to this day. And so a lot of crime started spiking up from non-natives coming to the reservations, yeah. Like all across the reservations. And we just, I mean, getting away with murder. I mean, you hear it all across. And yeah. And so this whole missing murder started, and well, it started way back then. And you just hear all sorts of, like, I've had a lot of ladies walking up to me, telling me some of their like very vulnerable stories, becoming very vulnerable, telling me like how like their sisters were murdered, their brother's gone missing. Currently this dude, one of the stories that I've family that I'm working with, just like this guy just went missing. Like he went to a windmill and they feel like something else had happened to him. Like it's huge. Like one of these girls getting trafficked, like a potential mansion that has holding woman inside. It's huge. And so like I'm in it. I'm in it, but I'm a lot more full fledged. I'm not like, dude, you know, being an idiot.
Trying to be so, like, here's my money. Can I get a girl? And you're trying to get the story and get in and like,
yeah.
Yeah. Now you're like, yeah, no, I feel you, dude. Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a cause that you're going after though, dude.
Yeah. It is. It's huge. And so that's where I'm at right now. And so I'm working on a short documentary, actually. I'm working on a couple of projects. So a short documentary is about canine search and rescue. Just Navajo lady actually started her own search and rescue operation or organization, and to address the lack of search and rescue from the Navajo Nation Police Force, because they don't have one. You know, they don't have that. And so she started doing that, and like now all these families just talk to her, man. They tell her all sorts of information, and then like that chick, she's been shot at, man. Like she's been shot at. Like I was like, holy fuck, you were shot at? And she's like, yeah, you know, at this one area because we're searching for this person's family. And I was like, holy fuck, like, you know. So she's like roaming around. With a pistol all the time. And so like I'll go out with searches with her every once in a while and just kind of like see what's up. I usually bring my pistol too with me. And
on the reservation, on the nation, with a pistol, what you guys have the same, everybody can tote one around or
oh man, you know, it's such an interesting thing because
I feel like there's just like this, like, what the hell, man? It's Native America, bro. You're the indigenous people. Okay. Like, I owe you everything, you know, like I'm so pissed right now as this white dude. I'm so sorry. I just want to say that like this whole, like, you can't lock someone up because they're not of the tribe or they're not from the area. It's so stupid and shitty. I don't usually swear on my podcast, but I'm finding it to be, I'm pissed inside, bro. I am, dude. This is not funny.
Yeah.
I mean, like it is, but it's not. Oh.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
So can you carry, like, is it okay just to like roll on?
It's a super interesting thing. So I had one officer one time, this meth head came and like tried to break into our place, and I ended up beating him. I didn't kill him or anything. Like he probably thought it was just my mom there. Little did he know I was home, and yeah. Came out and like just threw the dude on the ground. I threw him off the porch. I mean, and like it was just like bewildered, and I just like held him down and started beating the crap out of him and tied him up, called the police. Police came, and dude, I legit verbatim, the police officer goes, "You have a gun?" I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Next time just shoot him." Right? And so that's one police officer. Another police officer I spoke to was like, "Yeah, you know, you can carry, but you can't carry in public." Another police officer I spoke to was like, "We're not allowed to have anything. Like, as citizens, we're not supposed to have anything." So I've heard three different views and perspectives from three different officers who, it's not like the actual law, when you look at it, it says that as a native of Navajo, you can actually carry. But yeah. You can't carry open carry. So, but these police officers, like one of them was like, "Okay, I see your pistol. You know, just make sure it's not loaded. You know, while we're doing these searches, you know, just make sure it's not loaded. No one's not in the chamber." There.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I was like, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's such a strange issue, and there really isn't much like.
But yeah, here in Utah, on, like, I could walk around with one in the chamber. Tactically loaded with an extra one in the mag that the chamber took. Okay. Mm-hmm. Put another one in, and then I'm ready. Yeah. And I can keep that. And everywhere I go, it's like, you know, but
yeah.
What part of America do you not fall under?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Get it, man. Yeah. No, there's so much like red tape on the reservation. So I mean, it goes back to the, like, 1830s, like, laws that were... So, basically, like, that law I told you about, the case from 1978, that now, just because it was one tribe, but since it went to Supreme Court, now, you know, everyone goes off of that. You know, they go off of it. So, there's a lot of cases back then that happened in, like, the 1830s that now are now applied to a lot of the reservations all across the United States. And so... the dependent nation before these like laws in the 1830s were passed, a lot of native tribes were independent nations. They were able to economically thrive. They could do what they needed to have to thrive. And these laws were passed in the 1830s, Georgia versus Cherokee Nation. And basically it was like, you know, there's gold on the Cherokee Nation and we want the gold. And the Supreme Court ruled that the state has no jurisdiction over tribal nations. Mm-hmm. Andrew Jackson at the time was like, "Okay, that only applies to state, not federal. We're going to go and move the Cherokee. Like, I want that gold." Mm-hmm. And then that Trail of Tears happened. Because they're a dependent nation, they don't understand the concept of what gold is. They don't understand the concept of what this land can do for us. So yes, we're going to, in their interests, we're going to move them away. So that was basically what happened. That's how the chair. I mean, it's actually a lot longer than that. That's just of the shortened version of it. And so that applied to every other nation. It's like, hey, you're now all dependent nations. You're no longer independent. You're now dependent on the United States government. So it's because of that, there's so much restrictions on what.
Well, because the Fed kicks down a payment to, you know, indigenous folk that have a certain amount in them, and then they can get, you know, approved for federal benefits. And so they're going to try to hold over. It's like, what's worth more? The freedom to have the whole reservation free to really be independent of everything and just cut off that money? Or would they rather? I don't know, man. You guys should have all the land. Hey, this shouldn't even be a question. Having this conversation with you, right? Because like my wife's family was on the mother effing Mayflower, one of the trips that came here, and they were one of the like the four that didn't sign onto the Mayflower's constitution of like they are all like this religious cult of we're going to sign a constitution on the Mayflower saying they're like, no, we're going to break away from that and go find our own place to live here in America. Mm. And at the end of the day, they landed in a Native American place that had on the East Coast, like in the New York area, they landed a little higher than New York. And so they moved back a little bit along the coast and they came back to that area between where they were at in New York. And they said, hey, look, here's a whole village that no one's at because everybody had died. All of the natives have died like the plague and whatever. And so here these pilgrims just move into this that we brought the plague. We brought all these diseases with the blankets. I'm so pissed, bro. I tell my wife all the time, man. It's like your ancestors, dude. Okay. I'm like, what the hell? She's like, remember, they are the ones that broke away from it. They broke away from it. But
yeah.
How do we fix that? Okay, I can't change the past, right? Cyrus, I can't change the past. I could look to the future and just be a better steward of where I have my property and my land for the future. You know, that's all we can do is be better stewards and not let the past happen again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's actually a really complicated question. And it's a very difficult one. Yeah. It's a difficult one to answer because a lot of natives right now really want to have sovereignty. They really want to be able to do what they want to do. They want to be able to have their businesses on the reservations. There's actually a lot of entrepreneur natives out there and they're doing amazing things. It's just, they had to go off of the reservation. So they go off of the reservation to do a lot of this work that they want to do with businesses that they want to have. And so when they're on the Navajo Nation, it's a totally different thing. And one of the issues that is going on right now, which is something I recently just found out. I knew about it, but I never knew how big of a deal it was. So this is the other documentary I'm working on. So this is the second one, which probably won't start filming until next year sometime. And I was like, man, you know, why is there so much illegal burning? Why is there so much illegal dumping? And I was like, why is there no waste management on the Navajo Nation? Where's the waste management? Where are the dump trucks at? Like, why is it that the main towns, which are Chinle, Tuba City, Kienta, Crown Point, and Shiprock, Wind Rock, like, why are these main towns, why are they the only ones that have the actual waste management services? But then the rest of the nation, right, there's none. All the rural areas, there's nothing.
Nothing.
So people are like, they're resorted to having to do that. That's the only thing that they can do. So I really found an interest in that. So I started digging around and like looking through history, and I was like, holy smokes. One of the reasons why the Romans and the Greek did so well is because they established the waste management system. They started to have sewage systems. They started to have public toilets. One of the things that they required was that you're not allowed to have trash. You had to dump your trash more than a mile away. They actually started to have people who would pick up the trash. So they were a clean society. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. Because after the fall of the Roman Empire, there's no waste management again, like for a long time. Like it's just people just shitting in the road and
trash.
Plague being everywhere. Yeah, everywhere. And then, so from those two, when I got that award in New York, I started thinking about New York and seeing the trash there.
Truth.
Like the trash is there, but they would go and pick it up right away and get rid of it. And I'm like, why is New York such an economic hub? Like why is that? So I started looking into that, and no one actually in the early 1900s, they did not. No one wanted to live in New York. Like it was a cesspool back then. Mm-hmm. Like just disease everywhere, rats everywhere. I mean, there's still rats everywhere. But like it was worse back then. It was worse. And I believe it was Theodore Roosevelt. I don't know who it was. It was someone famous, right? Someone big. I think it was Theodore Roosevelt who started the white. I couldn't call him the white suit. white suits. These guys would put on white suits and they would go around and start cleaning up New York. Like, that's all they were doing. And they would do that. And then once they started doing that, people started moving in because New York was getting cleaner. And people were like, oh, I want to stay here now, like, because New York's clean. I was like, wow. And then it just kept continue moving. Now New York has a New York sanitation with over 8,000 workers. They praise their New Yorkers, or not New Yorkers, they praise New York sanitation as actual what police officers. Like, they actually have, like, these New York sanitation workers have police officer uniforms that's green. Like, they actually look, I thought when I saw it that they're Border Patrol. And I was like, wow, man, these guys are, like, highly respected. Like, there's actually, like, there's a whole parade for them. They call them the... I forgot what they called them. I don't remember. I'm not a New Yorker, but...
Dude, I was just talking about it last night. You know, like, you know, I was like, hey, custodians at high schools, you know, it's a thankless job, you know, these folks that go in and we expect it to be clean when we sit down at the bathroom, you know, the worker at the bathroom that's sanitizing it, you know, it's like, we take that for granted, right? We think, oh, that's mm-hmm. That's below me. That's below me. I'll never throw trash away. I don't want to be the garbage man. That's what, growing up, you have to throw it in the back. No, man, there's... Somebody has to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crucial.
There should be a garbage man appreciation day.
You know? Yeah. No,
we have so many days to appreciate things.
Yeah.
What about the garbage man? Sanitation.
Yeah. You deployed, right? You deployed.
No, like, I've not. Oh, okay. No, I'm not. No.
Oh, anyways, like, one of the things I thought about was like, man, could you imagine how those deployments would be if there was no waste management from the military side? Like, that place would just
build up. If they didn't have that
up,
implemented, like a waste management.
Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah, it is. And so that's the burn pits, though, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, that's where the burn pits, yeah.
And here we are. It was full circle, right? You're like, burn pits on the res, burn pits in, you know, Rome.
Yeah, exactly. And burn pits
in war. You know, I remember the movie Platoon. Oh, was it Platoon? Yeah, and Charlie Sheen's like, you know, he's pulling the shit out of the shitter with the guys, and they're burning it, and they're lighting it on fire. You know, they're filling it up with gasoline, and they're burning the outhouse crap so that they can put it back in. You know, and you just see this black smoke going up in the air, and you're like, those are little burn pits. It's that's awful for the troops to have to deal with, and downwind. Mm-hmm. You know, from were you involved? Do you recall burn pits?
They were around. Yeah, they were around. Like, I saw them. I never had to do it, thankfully, but yeah, they were around. They were, you would see them just burning.
Did you smell it?
Yeah, it was horrible.
That's what they're talking about. Why you should have, you know, burn pit compensation.
Yeah.
You smelt it. That's horrible.
Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons why I started looking into this waste management. Was I was like, man, there's actually a lot of illegal burning going on the Navajo Nation because there's no waste management. Right. I was like, man, this is a huge issue. So that kind of comes back into like, oh man, I need to make a documentary on this to kind of highlight this issue, to highlight like, hey, like, also, if you have waste management, you can build infrastructure, you can create jobs that way. It's like, oh, okay, well, you guys can handle your waste management. Okay, let's build something. Now that we know you have some infrastructure, I'm not infrastructure, some landfills,
or burn it so that it can burn it.
Incinerator.
Eco-friendly style, like they have here in Utah by Hill Air Force Base. It's got a huge chimney. Mm. I remember it was built in the late 80s, and it was like revolutionary. They're like, the new waste management burn facility here in Layton, Utah. And, you know, it's where they burn the John Does. You know, if you have, if you get, where do they take you to cremate you up there? One of my friend works there. He's like, I found a toe. I was like, get out of here, dude. He's like, he's like cleaning out the incinerator one time. He's like, I found a toe. I was like, oh, bro, but again, where do you put the dead? Where do you put, you know, the burn pit? Put it in an incinerator. I don't know.
So here's a little side note, about the waste management. I was talking to this other Army Ranger about it. He's an urban planner, and I was talking about this whole project I was wanting to do with him, kind of get an insight on him. He's like, you're onto something, man. He's like, do you know who owned waste management from like the early 1900s to about the 80s or 90s? I was like, nah, and I kind of said some names, like, no. He's like think some more. And I was like I have no idea. No idea.
He's like,
the mafia.
Oh. Yeah, well, look what happened in 9/11, right? When the towers got hit, all of the metal
was sent to the mafia's scrapyard through, like, it was all like, it's all like, how come they got the contract? They had all the waste. They were taking all of this, all of it over to their dumps. And there was like this big hubbub about who was getting the contracts through the New York mayor's office or whatever to haul all of the steel out. Like you said, that's who he is, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, man, if the mafia is like into the waste management business, like I think I'm on to something right now. So yeah, I'm obviously not doing a story on the mafia and the waste management, but like it's, but you know, it's like, you know, why is the mafia going into waste management business? It's like, well, they know it's crucial. I mean, there's a whole list of reasons. Like, it's crucial for the community. There's always going to be trash, and it's the mafia. So money laundering 100%. Easily. It's like, right.
Yeah. It takes all these boxes for them.
Yeah. And like, oh wait, we handle the trash. So dead body, we'll just send it out to our trash dump. Like
it's, wolf it's to come you know, over here and he'll bring it over. Don't worry. It gets crushed up and it's gone. See you later.
Yeah. Yes. So I just like realized all of that. And I was like, wow, man, this is crucial. I'm onto something. So that's the other project that I'm doing. So that's the two projects. So the one's about the lady search and rescue. This one's about the waste management documentary. And then
are you writing something about Standing Rock too? Aren't you doing a book on Standing Rock? Is that right? Or
so, yeah. So the book, I've actually restarted it. Well, I didn't just restart it. So the first time I wrote it, it was when I actually started coming back when I got back from Standing Rock. And it was still, I'm sober. I'm a sober guy now. I've been sober a couple of years and getting close to five. And I ended up rereading it. Like I reread it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is not true to who I am. I'm making myself sound like a hero in Standing Rock. And I was like, that's not how it went down. I was actually transitioning from the army. I had no like direction in life. I had no idea what I was doing. And so like I'm writing about that and like how Standing Rock journalism came through there. And I'm just writing about that. And it's really, really difficult because I'm like looking at what like probably like one of the saddest moments of my life. And I'm just like writing about how I was thinking, how I was feeling, like what I was expecting. So like it dives into a lot of that perspective. It's about Standing Rock, but it's also a military transition book. So it's like the transitioning of like, what do I do?
What did you say? What made you sober? What were you not? So what was your vice?
So I was drinking. Drinking was a big one for me, and I just like I remember I just was I dropped out of college because all I was doing was drinking. I was by myself, had no one really to talk to, and so I just was like I remember like looking at this bottle when I was like, why am I even still drinking? Like this isn't helping me in any way, and I started thinking about some. I'm not sure if you're a social distortion. It's a band kind of.
Oh, I know exactly. Yeah. Mike Ness. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mike Ness. So, and I remember like him like telling his. I remember him telling his story of like I got sober when I was like 28, I was like 29. I was like, you know what? He got sober at this time. I can get sober at this time. So I was like, I'm just gonna. I'm like Mike Ness did it. You know, I'm gonna get sober.
Ball and chain, so, bro.
essentially. So I literally grabbed this like bottle. Like I had like three bottles of vodka, and because they were cheap too. So I just dumped all of it, and I was like, I'm never drinking again. And then I went to this VA like AA type meeting thing, and like I met this dude in there. He was like a Korean War veteran, I believe, and like. He was 50 years sober. Didn't have to be in there. Like he was talking
50
to us.
Years
like,
old, still counting the days.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, you know, I keep coming in here to encourage you guys, you know, to continue to get sober. He's like, I got sober years ago and my life got way better. And I was like, wow. And then a lot of these Vietnam vets who were there, like, so that guy gave me a lot of inspiration, just like listen to his story, 50 years sober, Korean War veteran. And those guys saw some shit too. Like, you know, guys saw like
frozen feet, bro. You know, I mean, you know, everybody deserves to take away their effing thoughts. Give me
Yeah.
But drinking takes you down a dumbass road, you know. I've been so wasted, and I passed out in the farm field, and I was just like vomiting in my own vomit on my face.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah, I was like, never again do I want that. I did that to myself.
Yeah, no. I totally get it. Like, that's actually. So I was a ranger, right? So if you talked to a lot of my anyone who knew me back at the Ranger Battalion, they'd tell like, man, yeah, Norcross, man, like on mission, stellar training, mission, stellar, like. Flawless. You take him back though, barrack side, man, all he was doing was drinking. Like, that's all I did. And so, I mean, that actually got me in trouble. So that's, so they're like, hey man, like, you're a good dude, but we gotta let you go. So I ended up leaving, getting kicked out. So that's when I went
because of
drinking.
Yeah
And so I mean, a lot of that kind of is in the book too, ties into the book of like feeling like a failure, like, man. And I, you know, I failed being a ranger. I failed like my leadership. I failed at everything. And I mean, like, I talk to them now, and it's like, hey man, you're good now, man. Like, don't worry about it. We're just in the past now. Like, drive on. So that's basically what happened. I just drove on, and a lot of that leadership and training that they taught me back then, now it's like, now it's me, it's here, I'm utilizing it, I'm going forward with it. And so it's like, you know, kind of, and they see it, my leaders, you know, they see it, you know, it's kind of shoot me like a message, hey man, keep doing what you're doing, you know, you're doing good, it's good to see you being who you were meant to be. Because I remember one of them actually took me aside and was like, Norcross, man, if you just stop fucking drinking, you know how much fucking potential you could you could do, like how much potential you have in you, like, just stop fucking drinking. I was 19, 20, 21. I was like, whatever, you know. But now though, it's totally different, man. Like, I try to tell people out with whatever I can. But yeah, so that's exactly what happened. And I got sober, I dumped out everything out, and heard like these Vietnam veterans like walking up to me like, hey man, I wish I was sober. I got sober when your age. I wish I got sober when I was 29. I wish I got sober when I was 30. And he's like, I'm 70 years old now. I'm only a year sober. He's like, don't ever drink again.
And bro, so, I mean, going sober is not the easiest thing, right? Because especially if you've been doing it for so long, like that cat that's been doing it for 70, or he's 70. Mm-hmm. I mean, now your body, the addiction can actually cause, you know, I'm not trying to scare anybody who's trying to quit, but you can stroke, you know, from, you can do all sorts of different ailments can happen from
it.
So, you know, at 70, I mean, he still sees it's worth it. Cut this out, you know?
Yeah. So I took that route, and you know, I don't really harp on anybody. Like, when I first started being sober, I was like, I'm sober. But now I'm just like, now I'm just like, I'm like, now yeah, man, knows. Like, you want to get, I'm like, yeah, if you want to get sober, man, like go for it. Like, get sober. I'm like, it's good. It's good you, for you. Man. It's good for your health. I'm like, you know, some people, I always tell people, I was like, some people can have a beer, man. I was like, I was never that dude. Like, if you gave me a beer, I need to have a 24 pack. Like, that was me. And, I was like, if you gave me a fit of, you know, Jack or whatever, like, no, I needed all of it. Like, I needed more. Like, I need a gallon to myself. No. You know, that was me. And I was never that dude who could, like, just like, yeah, man, I'll just take one whiskey on the rocks and that'll be that. And then, you know, go on
beer with your business. Just like a beer, with your dinner, you know?
It's
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it just gets into, like, three or four. And then, you know, I'm not... I guess sober in that aspect, I'll still have a beer. You know what I mean? And so, but I don't have any near anything like Goldschlager times, man. Those times are way behind me. Like, I'm so glad I had the moment of clarity while I was laying in my own vomit, you know, at such a young age. I was like, I don't ever want to drink this stuff again. No cinnamon schnapps ever again. Never, never, never. No, I don't care if there's gold in it and it looks like I should drink the gold. Don't. Or the whole bottle. I'm telling you, it's alcohol poisoning. It's not even.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we're doing to ourselves.
That's what. Yeah, so that's actually why another reason why it's so hard to complete this book about Standing Rock is because it is about me still drinking. And I'm like, right. I'm like, God, I'm like, why was I acting like that? Why was I doing it? So I'm writing about it. So like I'm putting, it's a very vulnerable book. I'm like throwing, so it's like, it's a book of like military and transition. It's a book about finding myself. And then at the same time, I'm still drinking, right? I'm like, it's like another 2 years after that book, I finally get sober. But it's like, man, I am not liking writing who I was back then. Like, I don't like writing about that, you know? And so I think it's like someone told me, was like, hey man, that's actually more real. Like people need to hear more.
Just turn the page.
Real stories like that of like people.
And keep writing and just turn your page and keep writing and then it'll be done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it'll be out there and then everyone's going to check it out. I'm just saying, just keep writing and then turn the page. Say, okay, write it out. Turn the page. As I tell you, I should tell myself the same thing. I should write something. You just turn the page. Just do it. Get it done already. Do it airborne style.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's good. I'll take that advice. I'll heed your advice.
Thank you. Foreword written by Rad. No, you're great. And I'm so glad you reached out, you know, and I know we're filming this during November and this is going to go out probably into November, maybe into December. But, you know, I just want to say thanks for being you and to your grandfather, and 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 all of the grandmothers that dealt with all of the grandfathers. Yeah. So, and your own mom and dad, no matter how rough or, you know, not rough it was in your life, you know, for you to be here and, you know, to carry the torch. And I have mad respect for, you know, Indigenous and for Native and, you know, my friend Yellow Horse. When you talked about Gray Horse, my friend Calvin Yellow Horse, shout out Calvin, he's here at Fort Duchesne, which is a reservation here in Utah. When you say yellow, when you say gray horse, it makes me think Yellow Horse, because they're Lakota and Utah. His wife is Utah and he's Lakota, his dad. So they married and he lives down here, Ute, I think. But, So they met each other, one in Dakotas and then down here, and they got married and they had their son Calvin. But long story is Yellow Horse is their last name. And Gray Horse means that he killed the guy with a gray horse.
Yeah.
So Calvin, if you're listening, bro, I just figured out how you got your last name.
that's how we got it. Like that's our family name. I mean, Norcross came from one of our.
Oh, that's your last name is Gray Horse.
Oh no! It's not anymore. It's Norcross now. But the reason Norcross is around is because one of the recruiters in World War One. Right. It was like, hey, we can't take your Navajo name. And this guy, our great, 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 great grandfather was like, he's like, well, they're talking to recruiters. Like, how'd you get here? He's like, I walked here. He's like, oh, well, your first name's going to be Walker. He's like, what about your last name? He said, his last name. He's like, we can't take your last name. Like, and the guy was like, you know what, man, you seem like a good dude. You walked all the way over here from Gallup or Fort Defiance to Albuquerque or Albuquerque, I forgot which one it was. He's like, you walked over here, that's a long ways to walk. You can have my last name. Your last name's Norcross. Walker Norcross. And then that was that. That's how it
goes. Last name, dude. Norcross.
That's how it came.
Oh, I love that story. I'm so glad we got that into this. Okay, so thank you for sharing. Thank you. Cyrus, you're probably, I think, the longest interview I've had in my time doing this for Soft Rep. Usually we get around 50 minutes to an hour, but I mean, bro, we're like in it.
Oh, wow.
And that's really something to say about your demeanor. And I just think you're a cool dude and to talk, and there's so much that you just put it out there real well. And I just want to say thanks for bringing that to us. And as I wind down the show, I just want to let everyone know to, you know, check out your links. We're going to put them in the website. Okay. So for that website that you have where we can check out your stories, make sure that we have that, either say it again or write it in an email so we can make sure that it's on the webpage and people can just click on it, your Instagram, how they can reach you, et cetera, right?
Okay. Yeah. So my Instagram is Cyrus Norcross. You'll find me. Just type it down. It's actually Navajo Ronin. Navajo Ronin is one of the names. And then... I do have like Twitter and stuff. I don't use them at all. Or X now. I mean,
and it's gonna give it to you.
Yeah, I do have Facebook, so I'm pretty active on Facebook. So you could just find me on there, Cyrus Norcross.
Oh, and follow. LinkedIn, right?
And yeah, I got a LinkedIn as well. So I do all that. I'm working on a website right now to really kind of throw a lot of my photos, a lot of my stories on there, mm-hmm. and to actually have some video work that I've done, like just short videos, you know. So to just to throw it in there. So that's kind of where. So that the website eventually will get out. Probably would be sometime next month or next year. So I'm working on a website right now, and that'll be out. But yeah, I'm Instagram on Instagram and Facebook, and I'm LinkedIn.
Okay, cool.
I'll email you the journalist link, because it's a really weird one. If you type my name up, you'll see like some stuff pop up, but you won't see that website for some odd reason. So it's a journalist portfolio website. And then when people look for it, they can't find it. So I'm just going to have, I'll just like shoot that directly, email it to you.
Yeah,
so.
Email that to me. And then we'll have Anton, my producer, Anton, just insert that in there so people can click on it on softrep.com. And then also, mm-hmm. I reach out to those that interview with me. And if you ever want a little bit of a platform to do an article and write about Ranger time or, Navajo time on SoftRep, I'm sure we would take an article or two from you to help keep that going for you as well, and have us to help push you into the same community you came from, so
because,
well, like you said, there's not many indigenous journalists out there, so got to catch them all like a Pokemon, then come over here, come with us, okay? Okay, so yeah, I'm just saying, do that, we do have journalism going on here, and from people like yourself who have been in the know, and you don't necessarily have to write about what thing you're undercover, and you can talk about, hey, this is how you pack a parachute, see you later.
yeah
like real simple. We'll touch base in email. And on behalf of myself and Brandon Webb, who owns and runs his website, softrep.com, and Cyrus Norcross, I want to say thanks for you, the listener, listening, watching, sharing, commenting, tell me you don't like me, tell me you like me, leave it all down below. Just get involved, get active, read a book, go check out softrep.com/book-club and our merch store. And, happy Indigenous Peoples Month, year, and millennia, because, bro, you were here way before anybody else, and America owes you all of its gratitude, okay? I just want you to know that. And everybody that lives, who's listening on the reservations, I'm grateful. So thank you.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. It was a great talk, great conversation. Loved it all around.
Not the last time. I'll have you back on. All right. We'll keep you just like as a regular appearing guest. And I think our listener will love to, hear more of your stories, because you're super cool to listen to. So keep it up, okay?
Thank you.
Yes. And if we ever get together, man, a definite handshake and a hug, because I appreciate you going to Stand and Rock and being who you are. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All yeah.
Right. All right. Love. Cool. Well, this is me saying enough is enough. And I got to sign off. And Rad is saying peace from all of us here at SoftRep.
You've been listening to SoftRep Radio.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.